Inside Llewyn Davis. Even though critics seem to love Inside Llewyn Davis, fans of folk music probably haven't been this outraged since Dylan went electric at the Newport Folk Festival. Still, the one upside of the Coen brothers' latest film might be that it starts a whole new cycle of protest songs that denounce lame Hollywood movies.
How you doing, Llewyn Davis?
Oh, hello. I've heard your music. And heard many nice things about you from Jim and Jean and from others.
You have not heard one nice thing about me from Jean.
If I had wings, I'd know as dove.
What'd you say you played?
Folk songs.
Folk songs. Solo act?
No, I had a partner.
Threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
George Washington Bridge? You throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge, traditionally. George Washington Bridge. Who does that?
Well, I had a man, strong and tall.
Well, if the music's not...
What? Quit? Just exist?
Exist? Is that what we do outside of show business?
There was no advance on my solo record. There's got to be some royalty.
Christ's sake, it's cold out. I don't even have a winter coat.
You're kidding me. Take this kid.
No. No.
I remember one evening in the pouring rain, in my heart was an aching pain.
Oh, do you ever think about the future at all?
Don't worry.
With you, I worry.
Well, you shouldn't.
Yes, I should. God knows you never do. You just let other people at your method of birth control.
Muddy river, it's muddy and wild.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
By Joel and Ethan Coen, otherwise known as the Coen Brothers. A down-and-out folk singer in 1961. From the renditions of his songs, he seems to have a little talent. I mean, he would have fit right in the times. But things aren't going well. I mean, he does play at the Smoky Coffee Club. It's not paying anything. So he goes out and he gets beaten up by a mysterious stranger for a reason that we later see. He tries to get representation. He goes to Chicago and things don't go well. So he hitchhikes, gets a ride back to New York, and nothing much happens. His career doesn't take off. Things don't go well. And he tries to join the Merchant Marine, but he doesn't have the money. It's about a failing folk singer at the end of his rope and career.
First of all, this is like one of my least favorite kinds of films, which is either the tortured or the frustrated artist. And it kind of got worse from there. You know, he's just a self-destructive guy. He's not that interesting.
But he's not even that self-destructive. You know,
if you listen to all the people around him, he is.
You actually had sympathy for the guy because they were talking about like he was the absolute worst scumbag where he was just befuddled most of the time, you know?
Oh, I wish that were all. I wish it was just befuddlement.
I thought he was a scumbag.
I did too.
The guy was just a mean guy.
I'm on team scumbag with you. Here's where I stand on this. I normally, if I don't love the Coen brothers, I respect a lot of what they do. Fargo is one of my favorite films of all time. Even when they're flawed, I think they could be interesting. I like the folk music scene. I have more Weaver CDs than anybody I know. I'm there with the folk music. I love Cats, especially Orange Cats. I had such a hate on for this film. Almost the moment it started, there was nothing here to win me over. And there should have been. I think part of the problem is I don't think the lead character was befuddled. I think he was just plain unlikable. And even if you hear him, the actor interviewed, he'll tell you the same thing. And while that isn't always a detriment to me, here it was. I didn't like him. I didn't particularly like anybody else. So to have to spend nearly 2 hours with a bunch of people I don't like doing pretty much nothing. I mean, there's no arc here.
Let's face it. The cat is only there for one reason. To give the sense of a story moving forward and having some point, and the gimmick of ending the movie with the way it began is another lame, desperate effort to make you think this all adds up to something, and yet it's just going nowhere. And you know, I'd rather be going nowhere somewhere else than with him.
See, I even like Justin Timberlake, and he couldn't even save this film for me. I usually like Carey Mulligan, again another very unlikable character. It's not her fault, not anybody's fault, except I don't know, maybe the Coen brothers.
I've stood like a prophet in the desert, a mad prophet of old, preaching that the Coen brothers aren't any good. Fortunately, in the last few years, they're pretty much determined to prove me right.
I'm afraid you're correct on that one when I think about Burn After Reading.
Well, yeah, that was That was pretty dreadful.
Fargo notwithstanding, I've just seen nothing in their work that it has in any way involved me. And that's agreeing that they are the anti-Stephen Frears, anti-Richard Curtis filmmakers.
Probably out of everybody here, I'm willing to bet at this point, I was giving it a chance longer than anybody else. I gotta say, when I saw the first images in the club, the way it was lit, I actually thought there was something kind of sympathetic and a little loving about how it was being presented. And I thought, of course, I know they're going to go to somewhere different, but maybe they're going to surprise me a little in what they present here. And so, you know, when you get down to folk singing, I mean, when you think about it, it's like, what's it got going for it? Well, it's thought of as kind of coming from authentic roots in terms of music and being, you know, kind of sincere. And these are two elements the Coen brothers aren't at all. And so I thought, well, it'd be interesting if they at least give it a fair shake, but play against it somehow. But pretty quickly, this thing goes off the rails for me. And this is my big problem. Everybody else is less than a one-dimensional character, in my opinion. Mulligan is just this shrewish, nonstop, screaming hate machine. And so she's one-dimensional. At one point, he has this professor he crashes at his pad now and then. And all the people there and his friends are presented as one-dimensional, literary, dotey kind of people.
You've got his kind of odd dinner companions who you know are supposed to be quirky, and yet there's just nothing there. It's like the whole quirky machine has run out of gas. You know, it's to pocket, to pocket, to...
All the folk singers are kind of sincere, not with it dopes. And so I get the feeling we're supposed to identify with him because he's the one realistic guy in the film moving through this world of people who are too stupid to know how pointless their lives are. But, you know, he's like hip to his misery and he's like some foreshadowing maybe of rock to come. But it's just like he just grows so tiresome and everybody else is just such an easy target. It's like, what is the point of any of this?
Yeah, I don't think he was frustrated. I think he thought the world owed him things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'll sleep here, I'll sleep there, I'm homeless, I'll carry my guitar around, and just a mean, contemptful guy. But to me, the best character in the film was a bar owner, and I wanted to see what was going on in the bar, you know? It's a horror movie about the bar, because by the end, you know, Bob Dylan's there, and you know Bob Dylan grows up to be a legend, and you can see all these other guys on groups going by the wayside and stuff. There's also a nice scene that I liked where they're recording.
See, this is the other thing that was really missing was, at one point, he gets a gig singing a novelty song about Kennedy and the space program, because this happens in the early 60s. And what you don't get is why any of these people, for whatever reason, are drawn to this music and want to perform it. But at least in that moment where you see the three of these guys singing this dopey little song, you get the interchange between musicians. You get the guy with the deep voice doing the silly stuff, and you get something from Timberlake, like maybe he's enjoying it. That was the one musical moment in the film where I felt like, I don't know why they do it, but they seem to be getting something out of it. The only other thing I got after a long trip and about 2 hours of misery, our main character makes it to Chicago, and F. Murray Abraham, who's like this big promoter guy, and he finally gives him a chance and lets him sing a song, and then Abraham looks at him and he says, I'm not seeing much money here.
Right.
You know, and that worked for me, but again, he's such a dick, he doesn't want to be part of a trio, he's going to go off to be miserable somewhere else.
That scene was embarrassing, I thought. I mean, it was just embarrassing. It's so obvious, because when you think of folk, anybody even close to our age pretty much thinks of Peter, Paul, and Mary, right? So the F. Murray Abraham scene was like such an inside joke thing, you know, that was so artificial. You and another guy and a girl, and you can grow a goatee, and it just was, no, it's just a phony moment in a phony freaking movie. Like Nancy, I actually, you know, I wasn't a folk music kind of guy, but I'm fascinated by the period and the time, you know.
And you get nothing of that, right? Jim, you were talking about being in the 60s and how you've got the Kennedy song and everything, but this was a movement that was there historically for a reason. There are reasons for the folk music revival, and yet there's none of that in this film. There is none, not even really, barely just a hint of what it was like to be in America at that period of time. And I think that is so lacking here, and it would certainly be more interesting than any of the characters, as far as I'm concerned. They had other things right. I thought they had the photography right. I thought the set decorations. When he's at his sister's house, you can see in the background a set of TV trays. I swear we had those TV trays growing up. That all worked so well, but there wasn't enough of love it.
I would give them credit for this, because what I really did like, and at this point, if I had to give out Academy Award for cinematography, I'd probably give it to this film, because it could have been like handheld, grainy kind of stuff because it's the early 60s, or it could have been the usual gauzy thing. But I thought they found an interesting way in terms of the look of the film to do a period film that I thought really worked.
But how do you have a film where the main character is A, unlikable, and B, has no growth at all? And
well, I can kind of tell you how you can do that sort of film, because this film, in a lot of ways, is very similar to Nebraska. It's got an unsympathetic lead character. And then in terms of the looks, I mean, we've got shots of highways, tired gas stations, empty terrain. There's lots of shots of cars shooting by and going off into nowhere. But it's like the differences between the Coens and Alexander Payne is ultimately Alexander Payne feels the pain of his characters and he understands it and he tries to deal with it. The Coens aren't really even willing to feel the pain of their characters. I get the feeling in this film, they're just like everything else. They're just too superior to it. They're not going to give into it, and all these other ancillary characters, they're so silly we won't even bother to pretend they're real people or flesh them out. So they're so superior to their material, where I think Payne eventually, he likes his characters, he feels for his characters, and they're not jokes to him, where I think the characters in this film are jokes to the Coen.
This just reeked of contempt for these characters and these guys and the pretension. That's the worst combination.
How can you say it's pretentious? The cat's name was Ulysses, get it? I mean, but again, there were two moments, though, where if I could have thrown something at the screen and gotten away with it, I definitely would have done. Because one was Bob Dylan playing at the end. In a film that had worked and added up to something, I'd give it to him, actually. But this film, it was, no.
There's a 1979 film. It's called The Wanderers. It's about kind of a street gang in Brooklyn, New York in the early 60s. And Ken Wall was a star, later Wise Guy. Him and Karen Allen, they're having this off again, on again kind of relationship. But the very last scene was brilliant. She is standing outside this cafe and she says, come on in, because they were, what do you call it, doo-wop kind of people. So she's standing inside and she goes in. She says, look, I've heard a lot about this and you know, we should listen. And he stands in the doorway and then you hear, you just hear his voice singing, the times they are changing. He listens, he doesn't quite get it, so he turns around and he leaves. That's the end of the film. The times, they, for him, it was over, you know, that's all it was all about. And now we're going to real serious, a broadening of consciousness, as they say. None of that is anywhere near this film.
Late in the film, he goes to see his dad, who's in a rest home, and he sings this song that kind of meant something to him and his dad. Guess what his dad does? He shits himself, and it's like, so easy, so obvious, and just as a punchline moment, I mean, oh my God, give me a break. Just the worst. And the end of the film, the interminable, never-ending, God knows why, John Goodman car trip. Oh my God.
See, I don't know what this was for. I don't know why it was here.
Even a person, I imagine, who had liked the film up to that moment, I don't know how anything survives that car trip. Just unpleasant people being unpleasant for no reason, and then thank God it just finally ends.
Isn't that a sign of the whole movie? Things just end.
Yeah, well, thank God for that at least.
I know.
That is a plus.
Characters come in, come out, and unfortunately, you're left with Llewyn Davis just being a jerk.
But it's like, we've got John Goodman. He has to get to Chicago. This other guy's been hired to drive him there, or he's his buddy, and Llewyn tags along with his stupid cat, and Goodman just says one unpleasant, abrasive thing after another, stops the car long enough to go off and do unpleasant things in the bathroom. I guess it's supposed to be, you know, life's so weird and unpredictable, the driver gets taken away by the police at night, and Goodman's abandoned in his creepy car, and then it's over, thank God. So I'm not complaining about it ending, believe me.
It reminded me of that wonderful scene in Animal House with Belushi, when on the steps of the frat house, a real singer sitting there singing, I gave my love an apple, and Belushi's just watching him, and he just takes the guitar and just smashes it.
Right.
and he throws it back and goes, sorry. That's what I wanted to do in this film.
And yeah, the four of us are sitting here and we've got a major hate on for this film. That's not the way it's being received critically.
No.
Yeah, but yeah, who cares?
Taking off, Pop. Shipping out. Try something new. Here's this. I used to like this.
My honey, fare thee well.